certainly the whiskey world was really looking to the American palate and, you know, and following that trend. So, I mean, just a very quick tasting amount. I'm not going to hog the microphone. But the interesting thing about Crested Ten is it's a blend. So it's grain whiskey and single pot still whiskey. Single pot still whiskey is the defining Irish style. Made at Middleton, and it uses a mix of malted and unmalted barley. So that's really what, you know, as well as triple distillation and no smoke. But it's that mix of malted and unmalted barley which defines single pot still whiskey and defines the classic Irish style from the 19th century onwards. And what single pot still does, what the unmalted barley does, is give this slight buttery, oily character to the whiskey. And it gives little touches, older whiskies, you get kind of leathery notes beginning to develop. And on the palate, you get really good acidity again. So you get this crunchiness coming through and a real intense spiciness. And because there's a fair whack of single pot still in this blend, that's why I chose it. Because you've got this kind of bready quality, this softness, but then there's some kind of gear change halfway through, which is kind of, whoa, here come the spices. So let's have a wee look at our Crested Ten and see what we think about it. I'll pass the microphone on to whoever wants to take it.
Well, I'm not a regular whiskey drinker, but I certainly think the pairing works fantastic. I mean, I might even go out and buy a bottle of Crested Ten, which I don't know before in my life, to copy some of Anthony's sound. It's fantastic. I think it's a great counterweight to the unctuous nature of the sound.
Just in case you're wondering the price of Crested Ten, it's not expensive. You know, your average bottle of Jameson, I think, at the moment, well, let's say in the supermarket, it's worth about €25 or €26 in the supermarket. Crested Ten is about 30, so it's maybe 32, you know. So it really, you know, it's not in your, you know, because the Greece fund, you know, they hike the price up by about 40%, it was appalling. There was a time you could get Greece fund for £39.95 at duty free, duty paid in the duty free shop. That's one of the places you get it. And I think Redbreast was about the same price actually. But then they just decided to increase it just like that. So now I think Greece fund's about 57.
So there's a man on stage who specializes in making cider.
Yeah, really disappointing.
There's a man on stage that specializes in whiskey. This man is a pure wine man, I think.
Pure bourbon cask whiskey. It is an acquired taste to me. And I think I'm really 15, something like President Obama. I just find it too intensely.
I can't stand bourbon whiskey. Exactly. So, don't like it at all.
Now, on the salmon thing, it absolutely works brilliantly for the first two-thirds of the experience. I'm just worried about the last final kick that just might overpower. If you end up tasting it, but that's just... I just... Okay.
And I'm just thinking... two quick thoughts on this one when you were talking about the history.
This is Anthony Creswell now on whiskey with smoked salmon.
Because I was working in Mitchell's wine merchants in Kildare Street in about 1966, 67 or something, probably period like that. But our bonded warehouse where we used to mature the green spot and the red spot whiskey was just beside the Sherman Hotel, and I think the next door building was the Doyle, and there must have been a good reason for that. but on the whiskey front, the title of today was A Ball of Malt, and I always associate smoked salmon with the malt whiskies from the island of Islay, which have a slight iodine seaweed flavour because they mature the whiskey right on the edge of the
Anthony knows this well because his first cousin smokes fish over there in the west of Scotland.
From Manfredonia, which matured in San Luca de Barrameda, which again, right on the edge of the sea. The Islay whiskey has always had that lovely little saltiness to it, which we don't have in our Irish whiskies. But our Irish whiskies are the old malt whiskies. What is a malt whiskey?
The malt whiskey is just made from malted barley, water, and yeast, you know, and then aged in oak casks for a minimum of 3 years. Then you have the single pot still, which is a malted barley, an unmalted barley. And then another style of whiskey, which is grain whiskey, which is made in Ireland from corn or maize, and distilled to a higher strength. It's not neutral, but it's got a lighter character. So there'll be a bit of grain whiskey and single pot still in this. The single malt will be made at Bushmills, for example, the triple distill, and at,
Bushmills is Northern Ireland, up in County Antrim.
In a way, kind of Scottish style, if you want, but the single pot still is the significant difference. The important thing of like matching whiskey and food is that whiskey's strong, you know, I mean, it's getting 40% minimum, 40%. So don't be scared to add water to actually lower the intensity of the whiskey to balance the food. So you can actually have whiskey at relatively low strength to match food. And you treat it almost like a wine. You bring it right down to quite low strength and you get it.
God, I've never done that. I've never put water in whiskey.
People do quite often match smoked salmon with smoky whiskey, and that's just too much of a kind of blunt instrument for me. You know, because I prefer the fact that, well, like with wine, the smoke of the salmon just seems to integrate itself with the smoke, with the lack of smoke of the whiskey. So you're kind of going, where's the smoke coming from? Is it from the alcohol, or is it from the salmon? So I think there's an integration there. A little bit of barley coming through, and again, that acidity. But obviously, I'm biased.
The first time I've ever been to a whiskey tasting or watched people, I've had tasted whiskey.
Since we had Dave here, and if anyone attended these tastings earlier, I missed them because I have to do another thing. But there's an absolute renaissance in Irish whiskey. In about 5 years' time, there's going to be about 30, is there? Yeah. So
maybe Irish whiskey and Irish cheese are both.
Sure. Whiskey's just exploding. Not literally. But whiskey's kind of exploding all around the world. I mean, there's 21 distilleries in France making whiskey now. There are 150 distilleries in German-speaking Europe making whiskey. There's about 15 to 20 in Scandinavia, including two in Iceland. Hundreds in the US.
Icelandic whiskey. I'd love some Icelandic whiskey.
Lots of new. There's two new ones just opened in England. But Ireland is very, very exciting. So from this period of the 20th century, you know, where the Irish whiskey industry imploded from the late 1920s onwards, you're seeing this great Irish renaissance. To the extent that when you say what is Irish whiskey, it's so many things. Because you've got single pot still, you've got single grain, which has been bottled, you've got blends, you've got single malt, you've got Connemara, which is a smoky whiskey. So it's all these different styles of Irish whiskey out there. So it's a real, instead of it just being, and this is no fault of Irish distillers did a phenomenal job in kind of keeping it alive. But now there's a category. You know, now you've got each distillery making something different, so you can pick and choose. But what unites them is what I describe as a dangerous drinkability. You know, there is just something about Irish whiskey which has a juiciness and a fruitiness to it, no matter which distillery is making it. And quite often, one of my shorthands for tasting whiskey, no matter where it's coming from, the world is kind of Irish.
I think this guy would sell whiskey to the Scots.
And what is happening now with all these small artisanal distilleries, particularly would be a good example, which is probably the most established of the lot, is pushing that envelope a little bit further out. So perhaps looking at techniques from craft brewing, perhaps consulting with artisanal cider makers. Because the small distillers can't compete with Jameson or Tullamore or Blackbush or whatever. They've got to find their own unique characteristic. I would love to see old 19th century ways of making whiskey coming back, which would be using rye and using oats as well, using different roasts of barley perhaps. There's lots and lots of ways that you can play with flavour in whiskey. And I think over the next 10 years we're going to see an extraordinary array of phenomenal whiskeys coming out of Ireland. It is genuinely, genuinely exciting. And more exciting for me than what's happening in Scotland, which is becoming a little bit homogenised there, I would say.
And something that I was talking to you about that the first time we arrived here is there's no reason that we can't produce peated whiskey. And correct me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, the reason we don't have a peated style in Ireland traditionally is because they were city distilleries. You know, they were Cork, they were Dublin, they're the ones that survived. So now, just in case you didn't know this, Bushmills is owned by Diageo, which they managed to get in a very crafty way, but more or less, well, they more or less said, we'll take you to the competition authority unless you give us Bushmills. And they said, we can't, they just give us Bushmills, or we'll sue your ass, and you'll isn't that more or less pretty much. William Grant bought Tullamore Dew. Tullamore Dew has not been great for a long time. You know, bits were made in Cork, bits were made in Bushmills, nobody knew what they were doing. It still sells hugely in Germany in a few places, but William Grant, very cleverly thought, hold on a second, there's a movement here, let's just buy it. They built a greenfield site, €20 million, in Tullamore, and that's only down the road from Locks, which is the old distillery that, which is a distillery tour. We can, you know, meet Alphalas. I think there's still a few Alphalas who remember swimming in the wash to clean because it's really hot water they ever saw all week, you know, and they're still living around the Kilbeggan area. And then, so there's this investment, which I think will hopefully Diageo and Irish and Premier League will fight it out and, you know, do their damnedest to kill each other, and we can just push it a little forward, and then in their wake, all these little small companies can slip in. You know, those guys in Union Hall making whiskey, and currently they just have kind of whiskey flavoured drinks, but I think ultimately their whiskey's going to be quite interesting. Have you been there? Union Hall, I think, is it? Yeah.
I mean, there's a distillery in Skibbereen. There's going to be two distilleries. New
Skibbereen is West Cork.
One by the Teeling Brothers, one by Altec. You had one in Cargo and closed that. They're moving into Dublin. Slane Castle is getting one. There's one in the Crumlin Road Jail up in Belfast. One in Eflinville up in the north as well. And I did a tasting of Irish whiskey here yesterday, and two people at the end of it saying, we're opening up a distillery. So that's another two we're going to find. And it's, you know, it really is genuinely very, very exciting times. And the interesting thing is, I talked to one of the guys from IDL earlier on today, and there's quite a lot of technical openness, you know, so rather than seeing them as rivals, Irish distillers are actually going to these smaller distillers and saying, you know, if you need a bit of help, you know, we're not going to give you money, but we'll share our expertise about how to build whiskey and about weed management, etc.
That's a good ad for Irish distillers.
A real feeling of community
that's a good thing, I think.
Absolutely fundamental, and that's brilliant.
Good to hear.
Ultimately, what whiskey is about is about, and it's a wine term, right? It could be a cider term as well. It is about terroir. Whiskey terroir is different to wine terroir, to cider terroir.
Terroir, one of my favourite words, terroir.
Wow. A uniqueness of a single distillery making a specific style for weird reasons, because ultimately you don't really know why the flavours come from there. And the more that develops in Ireland, the happier everyone will be.
I'd like to hear more from the cider man. I'd like to hear more from the cider man. Sorry, I missed him.
He mentioned the tasting we did at Love and Threshold, and the two wines that were split aboard. One was a Gewürz Tremelin from Alsace, spiciness and so on seemed to work, and the other one was a Pinot Grigio from Northern Italy, which is totally different to the Gewürz Tremelin. The Gewürz Tremelin had the fullness, the richness, the spiciness, and the erosion, the acidity, and the dryness. So it's quite interesting. The other day, I put up a little thing on the Facebook, getting other people's comments about what wine or drink with smoked salmon. I think I was doing more work on Facebook because I didn't get many replies beyond it. But it varied from a cup of tea, which I thought was a good sort of one.
Cup of tea and smoked salmon.
To a Merlot. Which is very whirlpool, thoughtful white, and I think probably champagne is a Christmas one. But I think the Gewürz Tremelin, I always love the Gewürz Tremelin, a nice spicy one to go with smoked salmon. I think it works
Oh, Anthony's pretty active on Facebook, you know. But he could do more with attracting a bigger community around him.
Would work really well, but that was, there's people out here who would just hate the first round. I just wasn't going to go there, you know. I really like the first round, but it's very intense.
I don't like it at all, I have to say. If it was up to me, I'd go for an ice wine.
Just coming back on the
this is the cider man.
Which is great, and hopefully I can get one or two of them to distill some of my cider, so I can get some apple brandy. Now, well, I am, but it's being done overseas at the moment, which is a shame. The current batch I'm willing to support, but if they could do that, that would be absolutely fantastic. And as you say, if it weren't for the industrial brands, I wouldn't have a business. It's all about, and as you say, Leslie, it's tucking in behind those big brands. Once they're going, once actually the big brands have identified, because I mean, they can carpet bomb with their marketing expenditure across the entire countryside. And as Leslie says, you know, the boomers actually want you to believe that they use apples, you know, and they succeed in making you think that as well. But I think it's. It's very true that we are in their slipstream, but it's and a rising tide floats many boats, and hopefully that will be the same case for the whiskey as well.
Question.
The room is full of people, by the way, sitting around. They've had wine to taste. They've had smoked salmon to taste. I don't know if they've got any whiskey to taste.
Well, it's fascinating. Listening to you there, right? I think, from the audience perspective. Right. The star of the show is actually
the small town. Oh, that comes from Tom Keane. Tom Keane has brought the house down. He's
talking about